Perek Beis and Sefer Yehoshua, we mentioned that there's an overriding question that has to be dealt with. At the same time, before we get to that question, let's make sure we understand this, the basic outline of the Perek. There are essentially four parts to Perek Beis. There's the command from Yehoshua to the two gentlemen to go as Meraglim, what their, in fact, their job is once they go into the land. There is the interaction of those two men with Rachav. There then is a subsequent negotiation of the deal with Rachav in a warrant and in a response to her behavior and her righteousness towards them. And lastly is their return and their report to Yehoshua. So essentially the parak has four parts. There are three major issues that have to be dealt with in the parak. Issue number one is the question we left with at the end of parak Aleph, which we'll repeat at the, right now, is the notion of sending Meraglim at all. And then in relation to that, when exactly is Yehoshua sending Meraglim? When exactly does this event take place in the immediate aftermath of the death of Moshe? The second is the personality of the person known as Rachav. She explodes on the scene, and she's a major force in this perek, as well as clearly in the destiny and the future of Klal Yisrael. And the last thing is the issue of dealing and negotiating with Rachav with respect to herself and her family and their needs and their wants and their desires, the ability to do such a thing, and the ability to make such an agreement with her. The parak begins. Vayishlach Yehoshua bin Nun min Hashitim shnayim anashim miraglim cheresh limor lechuru u'es ha'aretz es yiricho vayachu vayavo beis isha zona u'shma rachav vayishkivu shama. A lot occurs in Pasuk Aleph. Yehoshua sends two men as miraglim quietly for the following purpose: Ru'u es ha'aretz, to see the land, and es Yericho, and to see the specific place Yericho. Vayelchu vayavo beis isha zona. They go and they arrive at the house of a woman, a zona, which we'll explain in a moment. Ushma Rachav, her name is Rachav. Clearly that's important that her name is mentioned. Vayishkivu shama, and they rest there, they sleep there. The overriding question that we ended with last week, or yesterday in the previous perek, is when is this exactly occurring? And here you have a very interesting discussion between, we'll deal with two mepharshim, Rashi and the Malbim. Rashi deals with essentially the following issue. When exactly is Yehoshua sending around? When does this event exactly take place? The Malbim fleshes out the questions further. It seems somewhat difficult, according to the Malbim, to have all this going on in those few days after Moshe Rabbeinu's Avelus ends and the Jewish people cross the Yarden. How does all of this stuff play out? There seems to be some level of ambiguity. If they're sending out spies and they have to return, who knows exactly when they're going to return? How does Yehoshua command the people that in 3 days we're going to go and we're going to cross, if he just sent the Meraglim? How does he know they're going to get back in time? When exactly is he commanding the 2.5 tribes to be chalutzim, to be the soldiers? When is all this happening? So Rashi says, Al karchachi ani tzarich lomar shebetochi me'evil Moshe shalacham. So Rashi makes a very important, clear point in Pasuk Aleph that Yehoshua sends the Meraglim during the period of the mourning of Moshe Rabbeinu. Rashi continues and goes through all of essentially the calculations of the calendar as to how this all works out and how it is that he comes to understand that this is the reality. And he basically establishes that there requires at least essentially 5 days from the time the Meraglim are sent till the time that they cross. And we know that they cross the Yarden on the 10th day of Nisan. They're crossing on the 10th day of Nisan, and Yehoshua had given them 3 days. So that takes us back to Zion. If that is the period of time that Zion is the ending of the Avelus of Moshe, and then Yehoshua is commanding them 3 days, and the Meraglim spent more than 3 days away. So it's clear that they're leaving before the end of the mourning period of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Malbim goes further, and he essentially establishes that everything that's happened till now, actively, whether it was Yehoshua commanding the people to prepare themselves for 3 days, whether it was the 2.5 tribes being established as part of the foot soldiers of the Jewish people, whether it was the sending of the Meraglim, all of that happens before God speaks to Yehoshua in Perek Aleph at the beginning of the opening of the book. Why, says the Malbim, is all this happening? An amazing statement. he says that Yehoshua was afraid. In Perek Aleph, when the 2.5 tribes are spoken to, the Malbim says as follows. Ki terem ba diber Hashem elav, before God speaks to him, pachad Yehoshua. Yehoshua was afraid. V'diberim b'nei Reuveni b'nei Gad, sheyechu chalatzim la'azro. He spoke to the 2.5 tribes, and he asked them with respect to them going ahead and being part of the soldiers. V'gam shalach meraglim cheresh lidosh v'lachkor. And then he sent out the meraglim also before HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to him, before God spoke to him, to check out the land, to look at it. And he was going to wait until they returned. But then once God spoke to him, he was ready to go when they returned. So here's a very interesting thing. Yehoshua becomes the leader, and now we're fleshing out the personality of Yehoshua. Yehoshua becomes the leader, and nothing happens. There's no conversation. Nothing's going on, and he is becoming the leader. This is going to happen, and he acts. The Malbim says out of fear. Rashi seems to simply imply out of preparation. So he gets the nation ready. He sends the Meraglim to go look. He's going to move. Something's going to happen. He doesn't know exactly when, but something's going to happen. He's going to do something, and he prepares for it. So we understand when the period of the Meraglim is taking place, when our story in Perek Beis is taking place. It's happening just before the end of the 30-day mourning period for Moshe Rabbeinu. The second large issue that has to be dealt with at the outset, which the Malbim goes into great detail with, is the issue of how it is possible that Yehoshua would send Meraglim in the aftermath of a monumental event that took place many years before in the desert, which Yehoshua was a part of, which is the sending of the first set of spies in Parshas Shlach. And having known that, having gone through that, why is Yehoshua taking such a chance and going to do what it is that he's doing by sending out spies if it was such a disaster earlier on? One parenthetical point. It's clear that in our study of Nach, there are requirements that we know other things that have gone on already in Tanakh and things that are to go on going forward in Tanakh, because they seem to be referenced and there's linguistic relationships between different sections, and we must be aware and take good care to consider those events in light of the other events that relate to them, particularly, let's say, in this case, where we have to connect the stories of the Meraglim in the Torah to the Meraglim here. Nechama Leibowitz has a very powerful article on this issue, and the Malbim goes through it here, and he says that there are 5 differences between what Yehoshua does from what Moshe Rabbeinu does. Difference number one is that Moshe does so alpi, the request of the people. Moshe sends the Meraglim before the nation as follows, based on the psukim at the beginning of Sefer Devarim. Vatikrivune laikulchem. Moshe says that you came to me, all of you. Vatomer nishlachan Hashem lefaneinu. We're going to send people before us. And then they came back and they said what they said. So the people requested it, and Moshe sent them. Yehoshua, vayishlach Yehoshua binun. Yehoshua himself sends them. Number two, says the Malbim, the purpose here is directed at one location. Go min ha-shitim to Yericho. It seems to me that Shittim was due east of Yericho, and that they were heading directly at one location, one specific spot, with one specific purpose. How exactly are we going to capture that area? Not whether or not we should go, not exactly all the other details. One directed focus. Third, the Malbim points out, is a very interesting difference in language. Here, they're actually called Meraglim. And in Parshas Shlach, they're not Meraglim. Lasur es Eretz Kenan. They're sent out to see the land. Here, they're sent as Meraglim. What's the difference? So the Malbim explains that the language in the Torah of Tarim is essentially sending out people to see whether the land was good, whether the land was bad, what the people were like, with the expectation that the people would hear what was reported and believe. And to do such a thing, the only way to do that is to send a representative from each tribe, because each tribe needed representation, each tribe needed to buy in and to believe what was to be and what was valuable for them in the land. To send anybody would not have worked. Meraglim, on the other hand, liragel, is to see the secrets of the land, to understand the local people and understand them at a very deep level, so that they can quite grasp what it is that's going on in the land. It's a very different type of shlichus, a very different type of requirement, and it did not require fancy people, let's say, nesiim, princes, but rather people who could do such a job, people who could go and do something of that nature. Thus it is that he sends Pinchas and Kalev ben Yefuna as his spies. The fourth difference between Yehoshua and Moshe is the term in the first pasuk, Cheresh. Yehoshua sends them quietly. Only Yehoshua knows about it. Only Yehoshua is connected to it. Only Yehoshua notices they're being gone. Cheresh lemor, go out quietly. Quietly disappear and sneak out of the membership of the nation. Clearly the people were preoccupied with the death of Moshe Rabbeinu and his mourning. They may not have noticed that two gentlemen had slightly disappeared for a short period of time to go search. It's quiet. There's no fanfare. There's no parading. There's no big event leading up to their departure. That clearly relates to the first difference, which was that Moshe's was up his request, based on the people's request, and Yehoshua's was not. The fifth, again, is the language in the text, that it's simply to Yericho directly, and not to any outlying area. Yehoshua seems to be very, very careful to not repeat the disaster and the failure that was the Meraglim the first time, which he was a part of, and he's intent on success with this mission. At the same time, the one thing should be noted is, again, parenthetically, is that Moshe, again, does send Meraglim at another time to see the land. And there's nothing wrong, it seems, with sending Meraglim being prepared. The Das Sofrim, we've mentioned numerous times, that there is a value in sending Meraglim. There's a value in being prepared. There's a value in going and doing whatever one can before one has to go and has to move and has to fight to be as prepared as possible. So they go and they arrive, and literally immediately they are found out. But they arrive at the house of a very powerful personality that has to be discussed, and her name is Rachav. Before there's any mention anywhere in Tanakh of the character of Rus HaMoaviyah, the great Gioras, the great convert to Judaism, there is Rachav. Rachav, the Pasuk tells us, is a Zona. One can understand the term Zona in a variety of ways. Rashi says that she's a Mocheres, meaning Mizono. She sells some sort of food. The word Zona coming from Mazon. Other Mefarshim take it more literally, that in fact she is a prostitute of some variety, or that she owns an inn that's situated right on the wall. She's not someone what you would call of high regard, but maybe more of ill repute, an interesting type of reputation, per se. From a different perspective, if she is that well known and that famous, and she is Rachav, and the Navi mentions her by name, it's possible that other dignitaries in the course of time had stopped where she lived and had partaken of whatever it is that she was offering in her inn, and that maybe she knew secrets, and that maybe she was connected in a certain way. Clearly, the king knows of her, because the troops are sent directly to her. But nonetheless, and she's believed by them, and nonetheless, they arrive at her place, and they rest there. The king is told, men have arrived tonight from Bnei Yisrael, Lachpor Es Haaretz, to come and, you want to say, see the land, we'll get to that word in a moment, something with respect to the land. Immediately the king reacts. One could say out of fear, one could say out of concern. Immediately he responds, Vayishlach Melech Yericho El Rachav Lamor. Immediately he dispatches a legion to the house of Rachav to say, Ha'otzi Anashim Habim Eilayach Asher Ba'u Leveseich. The men come and they speak to her. Interestingly enough, they don't attack her house, they don't infiltrate her property, but rather they speak to her from outside. Take out the men who have come to your house. They have come to see the land. Now, how is it so clear and so obvious to anybody that these men, in fact, are Meraglim, that they are spies? So the Malbim asserts essentially three things. One, they come to a closed city. Yericho is not the type of place where people are, you know, touring. It's not what you would, you know, it's not Disneyland. It's not a famous place of, you know, of a tourist attraction where people are going to stay and hang out. It's a closed city. It's a walled city. It's probably a small city, even if it has a large population. It could be very well that most of the people know each other. At the same time, thus, when it says Anashim Ba'u, the men have come, it's clear that they have come with some intent. Two, if they are in fact workers, and it seems to be implied, and according to some of the commentaries, that the term Cheresh Lemur, that they were supposed to sort of go incognito, if they would were workers or they were merchants of a certain trade, they would not stay in the city at night. They would rather stay outside, with the idea simply being they could go on their way immediately upon the arrival of the morning. To be inside the city or behind closed gates would be problematic. And the third thing, Balayla is not typical. People traveling in that period of time, in that part of the history, are not traveling at night. You're traveling at night, you have to raise your eyebrows and you have to raise the question, why are you traveling at night? Why exactly is that? So it seems to be that there's something else going on. It's clear that the people of Jericho could maybe see, literally, the Jewish people across the river and were afraid. As well, very importantly, the word lachpor is sort of another word that's very important with respect to spying. Lachpor, in modern Hebrew, is to dig. And maybe simply what they're doing here is they're digging to the depths. The hope, it seems to be from the Meraglim, is that Rachel would be the perfect cover. If a gentleman is arriving in town and he needs a place to stay, he would go to a local inn. If he is looking to not be part of Klal Yisrael and to make the attempt at not being an obvious member of the Jewish people, so then staying at the house of the most famous prostitute in town might present that level of cover. Of course, it fails. So, what does she do? She hides them. She hides them. Interestingly enough, she corroborates the claim. These men have come and said, there are spies in your house. She says, you're right. They were here. In fact, they were in my home. However, she says to them, but the gate is set to close, and they were here and they've left. I don't know where they are. Ridfu maherach areim ki tasigun. Go after them quickly, because you will catch them. She makes this claim that they were here. She says, in fact, that they were here. In fact, it seems to imply that, in fact, they were spies, and she knew it. And she tells these guys, instead of letting them come in to look, she says, go find them. They left. They left the town. They're running. Go get them. You'll catch them. And they listen to her. Amazing. They listen to her. She then follows, and Pasuk Vav. She brings them up immediately, quickly, up to the roof. And then she hides them again. The difference between the hiding earlier and the hiding now, so the Malbim points out, it's a very significant difference. Vatitzbeno is simply hiding in a place where a person might not look. Vatitzbenaim literally means covering them, that they're under something, that there's something over them. Thus, when she hides them, right? She hides them amongst the trees that were set up and established on her roof. Pasuk Zayin, they listen to her. Vanashim radfu achareim derech hayarden al ha-mabiros. Vashar sagur achareika sheyatzur rodfim achareim. The gate closes behind the pursuers, the members of the Jericho army, and they look after them. Vehema term yishkavun in Pasuk Ches. They seem to be very comfortable, the Meraglim, right? Pinchas and Kolev, the two men of the Jewish people. Term yishkavun, the Das Sofrim points out, Hamaraglim Shalvim, Ubodchim. They're secure. Ve'ein menuchasam nifrat. Their rest is not interrupted. Al af heyosam besakana. Even though they're in danger, they're lying there. They're resting there. Ve'al saleim al hagag. And then she goes up to speak with them. Now here we have a shift from the narrative of a story to a conversation and a testimony on behalf of Rachav that is astounding. She says as follows. First thing she says, gentlemen, I know that God has given you this land. And that the fear of you has fallen upon us. And the people essentially have melted before you. There's no belief, no way at all, that anybody here could think that we could be successful against you. Three claims. Why? So Pasuk Yud explains why. Ki shamanu eis asher hovish Adonai esmei yamsup nipneichem. One, the first thing she says, because we heard about Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, Yetzias Mitzrayim is 40 years ago. We heard that God made the waters stand still, that He dried the land, and that you walked through when you left Mitzrayim 40 years ago, and that scared us. Two. Two famous kings, Sichon and Og, who essentially used to rule the realm that the Jewish people took care of without any trouble at all. And then she finishes again, repeating what she had said earlier, Vanishma, we heard, Vayimas levavenu, and our hearts melted. Not only did our hearts melt, Lokama odruach be'ish mipnechem, no one at all believed that they could stand up to you. No one had the will. Simply, they were brought down, they were depressed, they were diminished, they essentially defeated, and no one had any confidence, has any confidence, that we could defeat you. And now an astounding statement. Ki Adonai Eloheichem, hu ha'elohim b'shamayim mima'al, ve'al ha'aretz mitachas. It's very reminiscent of language at the end of the first paragraph of Aleinu, and she says, for God, your God is the God of the heavens above and the earth below. As powerful a statement as any, from an incredibly interesting personality, that can equally match, potentially, the statements of Rus Hamo'aviyah later on in Tanakh. And now she turns the discussion to the negotiation. Promise me, swear to me, V'ata yishavu na li ba'adunai, swear to me in the name of God, Ki asisi imachem chased, that I've done for you a great chesed. I've done something incredible for you. Vasisin gamatem im beis avi chesed, unesatem li os emes. That you should do for my father's house a chesed, return the favor, and give me an os emes. Some sort of a symbol, some sort of a siman, some sort of a proof that I can hang my hat on, she says, to know that what you're going to do, in fact, will happen. That you should give them life. My father, my mother, my siblings, and all of their families, and all that is theirs. And you should rescue us, save us from sure, imminent death. Interestingly enough, just as a side point, she never mentions herself. Which her request is not for herself, it's for her family. They're righteous too. They're worthy also. Save them. That's what I want from you. They respond. Now it's a counteroffer. Vayamulah anashim, nafshinu tachtechem lamut. We are bowing to you. We owe you. You've saved us. We are under you with respect to death. They do not reply in kind, per se, with respect to the swearing in the name of God. But rather, they do give her some level of response. Imos agidu es divareinu ze, vayabaseik sadunai lanu es haaretz vasinu imach chesed ve'emes. If you don't reveal the sign and the secret, the os, then when we come in at the hand of God with the backing of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, then we will do for you what it is that you ask, that we will return the favor to what it is that you've wanted from us. So she lets them out. How? Now they're stuck, right? If the gate is closed and they're in the house of Rachav, how are they getting out? How are they getting back to Eretz Yisrael? How are they getting, to Klal Yisrael, to Yoshua, to respond? So she lets them out the window, the Navi tells us, that she lived on the wall. At the inn, her home was, one of the walls of her home was the wall of the city. And essentially, she had a window that looked outside the city wall, and that's how she let them out, maybe through via a rope. But Tomer Lehem, now she has again done another chesed for them. In other words, she had asked for a favor from them. They had responded sort of to her offer with some slight counter offer. She then does another set of chasadim for them. She allows them out, she gives them a way, a refuge to leave, and then she gives them advice. But Tomer Lehem in Pasuk Tazayin, Hahar Aleichu, go to the mountains. Perhaps, and perchance, the gentlemen who were running after you, perhaps they would find you. But if you go to the mountains, they won't find you. hide yourselves there, steal away there for 3 days. And then go on your way. But if you wait out there 3 days, they'll assume that they didn't catch you, they didn't find you, they don't know where you are, and then you'll be free and you'll be okay and you'll be able to get back to where you need to go. Now they respond to her again. The Malbim asks a fascinating question here. It seems to be again that this is out of place. This conversation, what they now say to her in response, should have happened already. The Malbim says is that their situation while still standing in her home without any way of leaving was sort of a shavua, a swearing under duress. And that they to do that to them is not essentially binding. But now after a second set of chasadim on her part, they now respond as they're seeing that she's letting them go, they now give her exactly what it is that they want. They say to her, first of all, we're freed of the shavua that you made with us before. It's not binding. However, we're coming to this land. And take the following item and hang it outside your window. Hang this string outside this exact window location when that is that we arrive. And bring everybody to your house. Right? And they're setting the stage. They're going to do what she asked with certain conditions. Vaya, pasuk yitas. Kol asher yitzei midalte beiseich, hachutza damo b'rosho v'anachnu nikiyim. One caveat. No one leaves the house once we arrive. Anyone who's in the house is secured. They're fine. If they leave the home, it's on us and we're responsible. V'chol asher yeitach b'bayit damo b'roshenu im yati abo. If anything happens to them, then we are responsible, we're liable for their blood. And one other, v'im tagidi es divareinu zeh, v'heinu nikiyim yishuaseich yishpatanu. In other words, they say to her, look, if we arrive in this town and every window in every house has the string hanging, then we're freed from this obligation because you have revealed our secret and our obligation to everybody else, and you have revealed the symbol to everybody else, and we're freed from our obligation. So essentially it's two rules. Everyone's in the house, and only you can have a string. And she replies, Chaf Alef. V'atomik yedivrichem kenhu. V'tishalchem v'yelechu. V'tikchor es tikvas hashani b'chalom. She says, so be it. She agrees. She sends them away. They go. And then, it's not clear if she hangs the string immediately, or if she waits, but it's clear that she's going to do it. We know that later on. Chaf Beis, they follow her advice. Vayelchu v'yavo hahara. She is not setting them up. She's not tricking them. Vayishru sham shloshes yamim ad shavu harodfim. They stayed there 3 days until the rodfim, the pursuers, return. Vayivakshu harodfim b'chol aderech lo matzav. They searched for them on the entire route, everywhere they could have gone. Again, these are people of Yericho. They know the terrain. They know the area. They are powerful people. People would reveal to them if they knew the location. The men are hidden. She has hidden them well. Again, she's done them a good deed, and they're not found. The parak ends in the last two psukim. The men return home. Literally. Maybe a day, 4 days later, right? 3 days hiding. Not even a day in Yericho. Vayashuvu shnei anashim vayedu mehahar in Chaf Gimel. The men return. They come down from the mountain. Vayavru vayavol Yoshua binun. They cross over the Jordan again. And they return to Yoshua. Vayisapru lo es kol hamotz os osam. They tell him about all that happened to them. Now remember, they're not successful in their task as it's laid out by Yehoshua. He said to them, go and find out about Yericho, go and find out about the land, how it is that we're going to capture it, and they immediately caught. So they tell him everything, and it seems to be that what they tell Yehoshua is that everything happened miraculously, that things were incredible miracles, and that they were rescued by this woman, and she reported to them that they have everything. And this is what they say. Vayomer o Yoshua, ki nasan anai biyadeinu es kol ha'aretz. They say to Yoshua, God has given us the entire land. Vagam namogu kol yoshei ha'aretz mipneinu. That all the people essentially have melted before us. We haven't even arrived yet. That based on her testimony and her language, that that's in fact the case. It could be that they took some solace from the language of the king of Yericho, who's quickly dispatching people to catch them and to capture them. But it's clearly from the language of Rachav, that she's in the know, and that she knows what's going on amongst the people, and she shares with them ultimately, essentially, what's at the heart of the people of Yericho. And based on her statements and her testimony, they report back to Yoshua. So by virtue of the different miracles that occur for them, by virtue of the fact that this woman saves them, by virtue of her statements to them, they report back to Yoshua that they're ready to go and that the Jewish people will clearly be successful in conquering the land. So if not for the way we open this year, we could assume that Yoshua then moves based on what it is that they say. Clearly then, based on what we've said in the Malbim and in Rashi, that God has already spoken to Yoshua in the interim, and that they don't realize that Yoshua is already set to move and set to go, that simply this is corroborative evidence, and this simply adds fuel to the fire, and it establishes that Klal Yisrael is ready to move and ready to cross the Yarden in a very short period of time. We continue tomorrow with Perek Gimel.